south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. You know, people ask me all the time about inflation and the cost of living down here in Latin America. Are prices going up any faster than they are up in the first world? And people want to know which Latin countries are expensive or are getting more expensive, relatively speaking. Since there are Latin countries that are cheap now, but soon they won't be. In other words, if you're an expat wannabe and you're on a strict budget, which Latin countries are very easy on the pocketbook and will be for the foreseeable future? Well, again, anywhere in Latin America, when you buy imported products from the first world, you're going to pay as much or more than you pay up in Cleveland for the same thing, and sometimes up to twice as much. You remember what I said about the price of cars in Argentina. Vehicles are generally twice as much as you'll pay up in the first world for the same make and model. And that's almost universal down in South America because there's such a long shipping distance from Europe or the States, and there's so much more international paperwork like border crossings, aduanas, and middleman handlers. Not to mention a lot of that stuff has to go through the Panama Canal, and that's an extra added cost too. Oh yeah, and I should mention that South American countries like Argentina, Brazil, and Chile have useless, bloated, tax-hungry governments that are growing fatter every day. And how'd that happen? Well, that's because their government's decision-makers decided in the last 5 or 10 years to follow the lead of the U.S. and Europe, thinking that's the fast track to becoming first world. And they also believe it's perfectly fine to carry huge first world-style debt, too. And that means, of course, they are not countries that expats should be moving to, no matter what Doug Casey says. In fact, I think soon enough he's going to regret that decision he made to become an expat in Argentina. In fact, I got a bet going with Expat Eddie that soon enough it's going to fall flat on its face, so I'll keep you posted on that. Okay, now let's recap some of that cost of living stuff. Like I said, first world imports are generally more expensive than what you pay for them up in Cleveland. Especially in South America, where first world import prices can even be double. Now, notice I said first world imports, because remember, the whole world, including Central and South America, have been absolutely flooded with cheap Chinese imports. And down here, that Chinese stuff's as cheap or even cheaper than it is up in the first world. And yes, just like up in the first world, a lot of local businesses and mom-and-pop outfits are getting killed by that stuff. But that's a topic for another day. Anyway, what if you come down to Latin America and decide you're going to buy mostly local products? What's the cost of living going to be like for you then? Well, I'll get to that. But actually, it would be a better and more useful discussion for me to report on Latin American countries that are relatively expensive now, so you can avoid them, and to report on countries that used to be very cheap some years ago that are getting more expensive all the time. Not only due to higher inflation, but also because of ever-bloating government and higher taxes. I'll give you a heads up on that so you can avoid those countries too. Or not. So, let me give you a list of the usual suspects. Latin countries and some cities that have first-world prices or nearly first-world prices now. Well, that would be Costa Rica, Panama, Argentina, Chile, and now, unfortunately, we have to include some of the larger cities in South America. I'm talking about a good percentage of the cities over 100,000 in population. And just in the last few years, two Latin countries in particular have been creeping up on the cost of living scale faster than anyone would have predicted. One is Venezuela, which has had 35% inflation over the last 5 or 6 years, and that kind of inflation really distorts an economy. And the other country that used to be cheap and now the cost of living is getting out of hand is Peru. Prices are really escalating there, especially in the big cities, like Lima. Now, Lima really is a big city. It's got 7 or 8 million people. And of course, if you want to go native and live like a middle-class local, it's still really cheap to live like that in Peru. And by the way, in every other Latin American country too, including the expensive ones like Panama, Costa Rica, Chile, and Argentina, etc. However, expats do not want to live like the locals. We want to live pretty much in the first world style that we're accustomed to, and most of us would love to do it on a $1,500 a month Social Security check. And expats down here are doing that all the time. I know a lot of them myself. But they're not doing it in those expensive countries I've mentioned. But what about Peru? I get a lot of questions about Peru. I mean, they've got Machu Picchu and all those great Inca ruins. Great weather and a lot of things going for it, except it's getting quite expensive. And unfortunately, a big part of that reason is all that international tourism that comes into Cusco, Lima, and Machu Picchu. They're starting to get their own taste of the Costa Rican disease. And though it's not as severe as Costa Rica yet, it seems to be going right along the same path. I'm talking about gringo dollar and euro contamination. Now, if you're going to be an expat in a city like Lima, Peru, it's not going to cost you $1,500 a month, an average Social Security check. That is, to live more or less a laid-back first-world lifestyle. Wait a minute, that might be an oxymoron there. Anyway, it's going to be more like $3,000 to $4,000 a month. You heard me, $3,000 to $4,000. Which basically means it'll be just impossible for you to live in a big city in Peru on a Social Security check. You'll need another source of income, like your own personal savings, a 401k, a private pension scheme, or whatever. Now, notice there I said scheme. Let me explain. When you're an expat, you run into a lot of Brits. And I bet the Brits and the Germans are the most well-traveled people per capita in the world. So when you're on the road, you do meet a lot of Brits. And it's always amusing to us U.S. gringo expats when Brits call financial agreements like trusts, pension plans, and insurance schemes. Like, for example, they'll say, Johnny, what kind of insurance scheme do you have? And to us gringos, the word scheme means something underhanded, kind of dodgy, even illegal. So when the Brits, for example, say their national health care is another government scheme, us gringo expats laugh because to us, everything the government does is a scheme. Sneaky, underhanded, devious, and essentially illegal. Our definition of scheme. But when we laugh about it, Brits don't get it. Now, where was I? Oh yeah, I was saying it costs $3,000 to $4,000 a month to live in Lima, Peru. The way expats like to live, of course. And when I quote those figures, I'm talking about a couple now, husband and wife, generally. However, if you get out of the big cities and go into the boonies, it's another story altogether. Once you're into a town of $50,000 or less, then you can generally do the first world retirement thing on $1,500 to $2,000 a month. Again, that's if you buy mostly local products, which is not at all hard to do. Because all throughout Latin America, there are local versions of all products. For example, if you want oatmeal, you don't have to buy Quaker oatmeal. You can buy the local brand for a third of the price. And sure, you can buy Smucker's jam or Jif peanut butter, but you can get the local stuff for a half to a third of the price, too. You get the idea. And to give you another idea of the price increases just lately, in the bigger cities in South America, like Lima, lately I've been hearing that for a visit to your doctor, it costs $35 to $50, where the standard rate for a doctor's visit in smaller towns in Latin America and in those countries that are well off the tourist trail, like in Nicaragua or Honduras, for example, a doctor's visit there will run anywhere from $15 to $25 for a visit. That would be the straight fee if you're paying cash without insurance, of course. And that's about half the price of a doctor visit in a big city, like Cali or Cartagena, Colombia, or Lima, Peru. And in those really big South American cities, if you need to have some lab work or some blood work done, the average cost might be around $100. That would be, for example, for the necessary lab workup before a surgery. Whereas in those smaller towns of 50,000 or less, and in those countries off the tourist trail like Nicaragua, Honduras, Salvador, Guatemala, Bolivia, and the like, that same lab work would be around half of that. Again, that's a cash price without insurance. Though I'll admit, even $100 for a lab workup seems like quite a deal compared to first world lab costs up in the States, which can easily run three or four times as much. Anyway, when talking about the cost of living in Latin America, one of the big surprises is that Brazil is not cheap anymore, relatively speaking, of course. Now, to give you a better picture of that, you might remember in a past show, I talked about something called a canasta básica, which actually translates to basic basket. And that's how economists and analysts talk about the basic monthly cost of living for a family of four in Latin America. So when you hear the term canasta básica, that includes food, transportation, housing, water, utilities, clothes, etc., and everything it takes for the average family of four, two adults and two children, what economists here call your average Latin family. But really, it's nothing of the sort, because there's really never just four people living in a Latin family household. They've generally got more than two kids, and often an old-timer or two, a grandma or a grandpa, an uncle or an aunt, and there just might be someone in the family's illegitimate kid living there too. So there's rarely just four people living in a Latin household, but economists here base their canasta básica on four people in a home, so we'll go with that too. Now, in the very inexpensive countries like Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Bolivia, and Paraguay, etc., that canasta básica runs anywhere from $500 to $600 a month, which seems ridiculously cheap and practically in another world compared to what a canasta básica would cost for a family of four for a month up in the States. Up there, the very basic minimum would be from $3,500 to $4,000 a month, about 6 to 8 times more than the cost here. And even at that, those first world cost of living prices I just quoted would be considered lower middle class. Families in the States making $35,000 to $50,000 a year are considered lower middle class. That's up in the States, of course. Down here it would be considered the Ritz. Anyway, in Latin America, if the average monthly canasta básica is about $500 to $600, it might surprise you to know that it's double in Brazil. Their canasta básica is anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200 a month. Still ridiculously low by first world standards, but double the cost of most of the rest of Latin America. And remember, when I talk about the canasta básica, this is the monthly cost of living for a family of four, which always seems to confuse first world people who analyze those government numbers. The question always comes up, if the average salary in Latin America is $300 to $350 a month, how can a family afford the canasta básica? It looks like they'll always come up short. Well, they're able to pull it off because everyone in the family works, at least some kind of job. They all chip in, and that's how it works. Now, you have to admit, that's kind of a foreign concept to us first worlders. I don't think families up north have pooled their dough since the 1950s. And believe me, if parents in Cleveland suddenly ask their entitled kids to chip in for the common good, or even ask their spoiled kids to get a part-time job, well, let's just say it wouldn't be pretty. I know that's the way it would be with my spoiled nieces and nephews, that's for sure. Now, until I brought it up, you probably never heard of the canasta básica before, but it really does give you a very good measure of how cheap or expensive a Latin country is. For example, in Argentina, the canasta básica is about $1,100 a month. Ecuador's about half that, $550 a month. Venezuela's about $750 a month, which gives you an idea what inflation's been doing to that country. And Peru's canasta básica, about $800 a month. So the bottom line is, if any of you folks out there want an up-to-date cost of living analysis of any Latin country you're thinking of moving to, check out the canasta básica figures on the internet. Then go ahead and compare the countries. But know that there's two canasta básica figures, and that can be confusing. And the Latin papers will often just give you one or the other, so you have to know the difference. One is just for food, called canasta básica alimentaria. And the other is called canasta básica vital. Now the second one, canasta básica vital, is the one you're looking for. And in this case, the word vital looks exactly like the English word vital, V-I-T-A-L. And the canasta básica vital includes the monthly cost of everything, not just food. That means housing, transportation, healthcare, clothes, schooling, and all the monthly extras. And the other one, the canasta básica alimentaria, is just for food. So don't mix them up. It's apples and oranges. Ha ha. Okay, regarding that, let's say you lived in Honduras where the canasta básica vital is about $500 to $550 a month for a family of four. So do you think you could live on that? Well, you could if you went completely native. Like, for example, you had cold running water, had a little garden and a couple of driveway chickens. And forget about having a car. You'd be riding the chicken bus for sure. But it does give you a rather nice gauge of the cost of living in that country. Now, here's expat Eddie's take on it. He says if you take the canasta básica of any Latin country and you multiply it by two, he swears that's the kind of money it would take for a first world expat to live in style in that country. For example, he says in Guatemala, where the canasta básica is about $500 to $600 a month, A gringo could live in style on double that, about $1,000 to $1,200 a month. And remember, that amount would support 8 locals, 8 average Guatemalans in the way they're accustomed to living. So if you think about it in other terms, that means when a gringo comes down here as an expat, he ends up with a consumer-slash-ecological footprint of 8 average Guatemalans, which I guess is kind of sad to contemplate, but nobody ever said that life was fair. Which brings me to a point that comes up once in a while. People ask me on occasion, Johnny, how many negative emails do you get? Do you get many people hammering on you and calling you a jerk? Since what you say on the expat files is definitely not politically correct. Now, I've had people ask me this in reference to the way I talk about the gringo advantage. Some people up there in first world land think that I'm encouraging first world people to come down here and take advantage of poor, uneducated Latins. In fact, some first world people think when I talk about that gringo advantage that I should actually call it the Latin American disadvantage. Well, it might work, but the gringo advantage has a better ring to it, don't you think? And, you know, at first glance, they have a valid point. Because I guess to some, I do sound like I'm out here saying, hey, you can hardly help but to succeed, since the competition down here, the Latins, are, well, there's no other way to put it, retarded in the ways of business. At least regarding the way us first world people approach it. Well, here's my answer to that. I would really have to say that the vast majority of first worlders that come down here and create successful businesses, they did not come down here with the intention of getting over on undereducated, hapless Latins. What they did was they came down here like expat Eddie did, for example, looking to buy a common product or service that they were used to getting up in Cleveland. Like for Eddie, it was sushi. He just loves sushi. And like he said, when he came down here a dozen or so years ago, he couldn't believe what passed for sushi. He said he wouldn't feed it to his cat. But like he said, every Latin gringo wannabe with a bodyguard or two just ate that stuff right up. It didn't matter. They saw that the girls on Sex and the City were eating sushi, so they had to have it too. So this is how it works. Many expats come down here, learn the language a bit, settle in, and start looking for creature comforts they were accustomed to having up in the first world, only to find the product or service doesn't exist at all, or the product or service is available Latin style, which means it leaves a lot to be desired. Case in point, my German buddy's Italian restaurants and expat Eddie's sushi restaurants. Now, my German buddy just couldn't get any good Italian food. When he came down 15 or 20 years ago, he said the so-called Italian restaurants down here, owned and operated by Latins, of course, offered basically a very bad version of Chef Boyardee, steeped in ketchup sauce with a basket of Wonder Bread on the side. And the Latin version of Wonder Bread is called Bimbo Bread down here, as you might know. And so often, when a new expat comes down to Latin America, especially in a smaller town, he notices he just can't get a good, clean, brightly lit hotel with consistent hot water and light switches that work, which is why all the good hotels are owned by expats. So what I'm saying is this. Gringos and expats come down here looking for services and products they're used to getting up in the first world. And when they don't find them, they say, hey, that's a niche I can fill. So are we taking advantage of the Latins when we do that? Probably, because if you open up a nice clean bed and breakfast across the street from a scummy, dank Latin hotel, you're definitely going to steal their business from day one. So are you taking advantage of that guy? Indirectly, maybe, but it's more like you're taking advantage of the general situation. So should we feel guilty about putting a guy like that out of business if that's what happens? I don't think so. If, for example, a gringo offers a better, cleaner service all around, then everybody wins, right? Except the guy with the dank, stinky, bug-infested hotel across the street. So in the end, whether you're uncomfortable with it or not, the way we long-term expats look at it, the gringo advantage lifts all boats, except for the guy with the cucaracha hotel who should have sunk a long time ago. And what do I mean by the gringo advantage lifts all boats? Well, just have a look at Costa Rica, for example. 30 years ago, Costa Rica was laid back and quaint and cheap, like so many places in Latin America off the tourist trail these days. Now, Costa Rica's clean, nice, spiffy, all polished up like a first world resort, and crowded and first world expensive, too. So, the gringo advantage there did lift all boats, which is a very good thing for those who bought in like 20 or 30 years ago. But now, After all these years, most expats I know living in Costa Rica now would gladly sell their businesses and get out if they could. But they can't because prices are too high and they're stuck at the top of a real estate bubble. Expats don't like the fact that the Gringo Advantage lifted all boats, because along the way, the Gringo Advantage was completely lost. And us expats, we don't like when that happens, and I know you expat wannabes don't want that to happen down here either. Because, you know, we do have our selfish reasons for maintaining the status quo here off the tourist trail. That's how we find our business niches. Now, the question again is, are we taking advantage of the locals? Well, even if you're on the fence about that, you have to recognize that expats are giving the locals jobs and giving them real first world training and discipline that they'd never get if they were working for a Latin business. And you know, in the back of my mind, when I think of the words taking advantage of people, to me that's a short leap to the phrase ripping people off. And I don't know of any expat in business who rips off the locals. In fact, almost all the expats I know who are in business bend over backwards to give a really good product or service. That's why when Latins are our competition, we just blow them away. In reality, it seems like us expats are doing the exact opposite of taking advantage of the locals. If we weren't here providing jobs for the locals, I hate to say it, but I think their lives would be a little less enhanced for it. Because if they weren't working for you, they'd be working at the Cucaracha Hotel. Enough said about that. Now I want to talk a little bit more about learning Spanish down here in Latin America. Now, as I've said many times, if you come down on vacation and hit the tourist trail, you don't have to know Spanish at all, because most of the waitresses and taxi drivers and service people will speak a little bit of English, and some will speak it very well, because those countries on the tourist trail offer in their universities and in their high schools and technical schools programs in tourism and hotel restaurant management, and English classes are mandatory, because that's where the tourist trail money comes from. First world gringos and English-speaking Europeans. However, like I said before, when you're off the tourist trail, most people don't speak English at all. Only certain professionals like doctors and lawyers. And mostly only the younger professionals to boot. And that's why when I give my Latin American seminars off the tourist trail, I always have a handful of bilingual translators tagging along to help out the group. When you're off the tourist trail, you just might need a translator, since the average first world gringo can't decipher a restaurant menu. And I don't know how many of you have actually experienced the feeling before of being completely unable to get your point across in a foreign country. But I assure you that some of the people at my Expat Wisdom seminars have approached me after a few days and said, "Hey Johnny, I really want to come back here, but man, I feel lost in the Spanish department." What they really want to know is, what's the fastest way to get their Spanish up to speed in the shortest possible amount of time? Well, here's what I say for people who want to learn it in a hurry. And there is a surefire way of learning pretty good Spanish, enough to get by conversationally anyway. And you can do it in just 1 month. And I call it Spanish Boot Camp. And I recommend it for anyone who's coming down here to live permanently. And here's how you do it. First, you do the Spanish family immersion thing. That's when you live 24/7 room and board with a Spanish family speaking no English, only Spanish. But here's the extra part. Here's the boot camp part. While you're staying with that family, you sign up for intensive Spanish courses one-on-one with a non-English speaking instructor, and you do that 4 hours each morning, 6 days each week. And that's in addition to the family immersion experience. Now, that's what I call boot camp. And I guarantee you, if you do 1 month of that, you'll have no problem getting around down here off the tourist trail. But that's not all. There's more to the boot camp thing, but I'll get to that. Now, the advantage of what I call Spanish boot camp is obvious. And you know what? You're going to hate it. In fact, you're going to despise it. You're going to feel like a fish out of water for the first couple of days. Not to mention, you're going to be in the toilet a lot, because you'll be eating what those Latin ladies in your immersion family are preparing for you and everyone else in the house. And diving cold turkey into the rice and beans culinary deep end like that will not be kind to your delicate first world intestinal flora, believe me. I've been there. And unfortunately, it usually works out that by the time you're regular, you're about done with the immersion program. Like I said, you're not going to like any of it. And that's why I call it boot camp. But believe me, you'll be about 6 months to a year ahead of any gringo who learns his or her Spanish any other way. Because the unfortunate fact is, if you come down here with bad or zero Spanish like I did, and you don't sign up immediately for an immersion course or what I call the boot camp course, I guarantee that in a few days you'll fall in with some gringos or Europeans. You'll be drawn to any and all voices that speak English. Even, I hate to say it, Democrats, Republicans, and Oprah lovers. Makes me cringe when I think about it. Ugh. And I ought to know, I went through that myself. Because you see, when you're off the tourist trail, and you don't run into gringos much at all, you've got another problem. You're checking out websites and emails in English, and you've got your iPod loaded with English music. Then when you're back in your room, you flick on your TV and watch CNN, HBO, Nat Geo, or porno to get your English fix. But none of that is allowed with Spanish boot camp. To do the boot camp thing right, go the whole nine yards and load your iPod up with Spanish music. Spanish rock and roll, reggae, salsa, merengue, anything but English music. And though this might sound like a brain-numbing suggestion too, when you get back to your room at night, you turn on one of the Spanish telenovela stations, one of the Spanish soap opera networks. And for however short they are in the talent and production department, you will pick up a hell of a lot of conversational Spanish by just paying attention. Not to mention, for you guys out there, all the girls are sexy, they wear tight clothes and often run around in bikinis. And not to shortchange you expat ladies out there, all the men in those Latin soap operas, those telenovelas, are suave, debonair, Antonio Banderas Latin lover types. So there's something superficial and shallow for everyone. And when you're finished with that month of boot camp, here's the topper, the icing on the cake. You take your computers and your smartphones, all of them, and you reinstall the operating system in Spanish. In other words, if you have a PC, you're going to install the latest Windows version in Spanish, and if you have a Mac, that'll be in Spanish too. And down here, you can get that done for like $20 in any computer store. And believe me, it sounds like a big step, and you'll really fumble along at first, but you'll thank me for the idea in the end, believe me. Because now, with your desktop and your interfaces and all your programs also in Spanish, you'll be absolutely forced into being bilingual on your computer, too. Now, I've done that myself for a long, long time. For years, I've had a Spanish Windows program going on my computer. In fact, I'm so used to it that when I see someone else's computer in English, it kind of throws me a bit. Now, of course, that doesn't mean you're going to write your letters and emails and do your banking in Spanish. But, for example, writing to your dear old mom up in the States, you'll write in English, of course, but all the functions and commands for the Word program itself will be in Spanish. And believe me, in no time, you'll get used to it. And the truth is, the only thing you won't get used to is the fact that your spell check won't work anymore. It'll be looking for misspelled words in Spanish, not English. But there is a way around that too, but I'm not going to tell you. You'll have to find that out for yourself. Like I said, that's why I call it Johnny's Spanish Language Bootcamp.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.